This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Yeah, welcome to the show. It's Thursday, July 23rd, and I'm always in a good mood when this guest is on the show. It's one of our favorites. It's Joe Pisapia. What's up, Joe?
Hello, my friends. How are you? I've got some more time on my hands recently, so it was very nice that you all could invite me over to talk some football with you all. It's good to see you, Adam Azer, and we've been talking quite a bit in the last few weeks. Same with you, Dave Richard, and of course, Jamie Eisenberg, I get to see once a year, which is nice, for like 10 minutes. He visits his family in New Jersey all the time. I live 15 minutes from there. You'd think we'd go to lunch just once. Just once, Jamie. Maybe this is the year. We'll see.
Jamie, when's the last time we went to lunch?
Fair.
Whenever I'm in town, that's about it. So today we'll get a couple of sleepers, breakouts, and busts from Joe. And we always talk, oh, this wide receiver versus this wide receiver, this running back versus this running back. Well, today we're going to do running backs versus wide receivers. Would you rather have Bijan Robinson or Ja'Marr Chase, Saquon Barkley or Drake London, Jeremiah Love or T. Higgins? And, you know, we're also going to talk about a team that I really like. We're going to talk about a player on the bust list for Joe who plays for the New York Giants. The New York Giants.
It's the Giants of New York. Is everybody clear? It is not the Ravens. I've been told I'm no longer the coach of the Ravens. It is the New York Giants.
Was his worse? Or was Nagy's worse?
Oh, I didn't see Nagy's.
Oh, Nagy's
either. Is it worse?
Well, it's not worse because he's not the head coach. Like, the head coach has got to be a little bit better than that.
You know what? Let's not forget, too. Bill Belichick, not exactly the big rah-rah guy. Pretty good football coach. Yeah. Like, you don't have to be great at making speeches to be a good football coach, I think, at the end of the day. But doesn't make it less hilarious.
Complete non-story, though. No one's going to care about this soon. But, Joe, you want to tell everybody what you're up to. You are the host of the Fandom NFL YouTube channel. You've also got the black book that people can get. So, quick plug, and then we'll get to the show.
Well, first of all, I already see people in the comments plugging stuff for me, which is beautiful. I love the people. I've gone ahead and perhaps crazily, by the encouragement of all of the people out there who said, don't go away, don't fade away. We want you to be back during football season. And the overwhelming crazy amount of messages and the kindness, which I'm sure Adam Azer has never experienced his entire life, all of that towards that new endeavor, which is the Fandom NFL channel. And I'm going to do things a little differently there. I'm trying to bring something a little different spin on fantasy. It's not just fantasy football. We're going to talk some wagering stuff too, but it's a lot of football talk and how NFL football and the stories that are going on and everything kind of also affect you in your fantasy investments. And I think that's very important. We're going to have beat writers on. We're going to have interviews, an amazing interview with Tony Farmer from Last Man Standing podcast about the Matt Miller fiasco, because I feel like we're in a Twitter football bubble. And I talked to some of my friends last weekend at a barbecue who are big football fans. I'm like, what do you think of that story? And they're like, what are you talking about? And we're kind of in our own little bubble sometimes. And we start to, I think, bring some of these really interesting stories out there for the general public. I think it's really interesting. And that one, especially since all the layers of the fantasy stuff and the dynasty charity leagues that he was involved in and not paying people out, it's the craziest story. So it's going to have stuff like that, but it's going to have a ton of fantasy content too. So something that's going to run just all the time for NFL. And of course, a black book out there on Amazon too, with the digital cheat sheets that get updated too. That's all available. So if you're looking to support, go subscribe to the new Fandom NFL channel. Check it out. New video dropping today at 11. Tried to do it after I'm here because I don't want to, I don't want to conflict here in the ratings of this show, which are much, much larger.
Well, someone already said in our chat, maybe we have Adam's replacement now.
No. Adam Azer is.
I didn't hear what Jamie said.
Who could replace you, Adam?
I didn't want to know.
Who could do that?
All right, let's get to our news and notes. Tyreek Hill. A video of him working out, but he said that he has no power in his left leg, so it doesn't seem like Tyreek Hill is quite ready to make an NFL comeback. Seattle running backs, I already told you yesterday about Kenny McIntosh, but Zach Charbonnet is officially on the PUP list as well. And right now, the PUP list, you can come off the PUP list at any time. Just, they're starting training camp on the PUP list. If you start training camp not on the PUP list and then you go on PUP, then you have to miss some regular season times. But if you're on PUP list to start training camp, you can come off whenever. Nick Imanwori, their star young safety, is also on the PUP list. He had arthroscopic ankle surgery, is expected to be ready for week one. Zach Rosenblatt of The Athletic thinks that Isaiah Davis is the early favorite to be the Jets' backup running back. Davis had two games last year with 7 to 9 carries. He averaged 9.3 yards per carry at the Bengals, 6.4 yards per carry at the Jaguars. In both of those games, he had a long run, 50-yard run at the Bengals, 24-yard touchdown run at the Jaguars. So maybe Isaiah Davis is the name to know as the backup running back to Breece Hall. We'll see how that – it was an early guess. It wasn't a definitive statement. We'll see how that battle plays out in training camp.
Wouldn't he be best suited to continue doing what he was doing last year, which is playing on passing downs?
Yeah, but he has just been a pretty effective rusher. I think the point was like he's been good when played. So maybe maybe that's a real handcuff then, because Braylon Allen we know is not going to be a passing downs guy.
No, but if Breece Hall were to take a flight to Tahiti and accidentally miss a game, then I think we'd see a pretty steady split, maybe even close to 50-50 between Braylon and Isaiah Davis.
Okay,
I think Davis has that role locked up, and Frank Reich uses multiple running backs. One is the running downs guy, and one is the passing downs guy. That's his whole history, and I don't think he's going to vary from that very much, and that means that Isaiah Davis will play a lot. I just don't know if it means that he's the guy to have on your fantasy team who will for sure take off and be a top 15 fantasy running back for those Tahiti weeks for Breece.
There are a couple – Tahiti, I love that. There are a couple of Twitter accounts that are pretty good to follow right now. One of us at Adam, no, just kidding. Of Coach Speak, Coach Speak Index is pretty good. And 32 Beat Writers, what is it? At 32 Beat Writers. Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
You'll get some good information there. I'm not going to say everything that every beat reporter is saying right now about players looking good or whatever. It's too early, I think, but you can get some buzz there. But Liam Cohen on the Coach Speak Index, Liam Cohen did an interview on the Schrager Hour, and he talked a lot about Bajal Touton and how they're expecting big things from Bajal Touton. And last year, I thought it was interesting what he said to me was last year Bajal Touton was really focused on ball security, and now he can sort of free his mind and focus on other things now as a rusher. But he said, quote, "We're definitely expecting Touton to have a big year for us." So again, we'll see how it plays out, and that's just one thing that kind of caught my eye yesterday. Okay, we've got CBS Sports Network today. We're on at noon Eastern on CBS Sports Network. The audio of that show will be made available in this podcast channel, and the video will be in the YouTube channel as well, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. We're talking about most undervalued and most overvalued players, bounce back players for 2026, and I've got a fun segment. I hope it's fun. Are they the same guy? I'm going to compare two wide receivers with very similar profiles and see if their ADPs are different and what that means for value. Joe, I'm going to throw this at you. A tweet of the day from Ryan McDowell of Dynasty League Football. And Ryan says, there has been a 30-plus-year-old fantasy football wide receiver who has finished top 12 38 of the past 40 seasons. That is wild. So we all pretty much always have a top 12 wide receiver that's 30 years old or older. Who will it be this year? Ryan McDowell of Dynasty League Football asks. What do you think? Who's your best bet for a top 12 receiver that's 30 or older?
Well, when does DJ Moore turn 30? I think he's 29 still.
He's 29, otherwise. Yeah,
so he doesn't work there. I mean, why can't it be Terry McLaurin? Let's just get back to business here with Terry McLaurin. It's amazing to me the short-term memory of good work that people have and the long-term memory of one-offs that people have where – They chased Josh Gordon for years and years off one great season, but they can't seem to recall a time and space where Terry McLaurin was actually productive. Well, I do. I'm old enough to remember it, and I'm old enough to remember it with very bad quarterback play. And then Jaden Daniels comes to town, and it's spectacular. And last year, as that holdout went longer and longer, it was one of the things I preached about on all my shows too, which is the longer you hold out, we see the same thing happen over and over again. These guys come into camp late, they're behind, no matter what their private workout situation is, it's not the same. And then they get to camp late, they end up inevitably having soft tissue injuries and all kinds of problems. And next thing you know, they end up missing time. Jaden Daniels missed time. The whole thing was a nightmare. So I think that's the easy answer. Probably you're looking at that same realm of if we're going to count out Mike Evans and we're going to count out Davante Adams, considering the quarterbacks they play with and the offenses they're in and how much scoring is going to be there, I think we're crazy. And that's one of the weird things I talked about on today's show at Fandom too, which is I'm looking at some of these consensus breakout guys who are in that same range, and I'm just rather turn my attention to the guys who have done it time and time again, despite the fact that the age is a factor. I get that, as opposed to the guys who've just never done it at all. So that's where I'm at, but Terry McLaurin to be with the first one that I would circle.
Yeah. Evans, Adams, those guys will get some votes too. But McLaurin, and then I don't think DJ Moore quite turns 30 this season, but he just missed. All right, let's get to Joe's sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Sleepers, Jordan Addison and Bo Nix. All right, Jordan Addison,
that's right.
Start with him. Joe, what do you have to say about the, fourth-year wideout now, I believe, for Minnesota?
Yeah, I'm looking to get paid, too. I mean, let's not forget that. When money's on the table for these guys, and this is another scenario, too, where everything that could have possibly gone wrong for the Vikings last year went wrong. But if we dial back just all the way to 2024, boys and girls, his wide receiver 20, his rookie season wide receiver 21. Now, a lot of that was from touchdowns, right? 19 touchdowns in those 2 years, and that's perfectly fine. He also scratched over, 875 yards in both of those seasons. Last year was just at 6-10. He missed some time. He even missed some time in 2024, which people forget. Had he played the extra two games, there's a good chance he would have been closer to 1,000 yards. And I do have a certain amount of faith in a scenario where you have a former number one overall quarterback selection in Kyler Murray, who sure has his deficits and sure has had his issues, is going to play football with the best wide receiver on the planet, one of the best offensive minds on the planet, Kevin O'Connell. And you're dropping into a scenario where it's basically S or get off the pot, where you've got to figure out if you are still a starter in this league and you're going to have a career, or you're going to be one of these guys that's now just a competition guy that they bring in. So your career is on the line. And I feel like when you have great athletes and their careers are on the line or their reputations are on the line, and to a certain extent, Kevin O'Connell's in kind of a tricky spot too because of how disappointing last year was and how good that division is. To me, I look at this scenario and I say, Jordan Addison's a piece that's pretty cheap that I want. He's the consensus wide receiver 45. That's worse than he finished last year. And I don't understand that because this is a guy at his best is a top 20-ish wide receiver, and you're going to get him so much later. So for me, Addison's a guy that I'm buying right back into, and I understand why the price is what it is. I just think typically it's wrong, and I would rather take an investment late on somebody like this. So this is a sleeper that's actually performed before, but I think this year, because of his ADP, is basically being drafted as such.
Okay, that's Jordan Addison. We're going to get thoughts on Addison from Dave and Jamie in a moment. And I think it's an interesting way to phrase it, a sleeper that's actually performed before, because he's in the same range as Ricky Pearsall, who we'll talk about a little bit later. Josh Downs. These guys have never done it really, certainly not over a full season. They have never been a top 25 receiver per game, I think twice for Jordan Addison. So I think that's an interesting angle on that. So we'll be right back. We're going to take a break and we'll get Dave and Jamie's thoughts on the sleeper call of Jordan Addison after this. Okay, Jamie, what do you think about the sleeper call on Jordan Addison?
Love it. Love it. You know, I think we talk a lot about, hey, Justin Jefferson and what he did with Carson Wentz in those, five games last year with Wentz. Addison played in four of those games and it was his best stretch of games as well. So, how much of this is just really a JJ McCarthy thing versus what this team's going to look like, what Kyler Murray's going to do, Kevin O'Connell's history. The one concern with Addison, and I love everything Joe said, and I agree with everything Joe said, but the one concern would be is, what does Juwan Jennings do to everybody there? Just because he obviously has a better resume than Jalen Naylor. He obviously is coming into a situation with a 9-touchdown season in the previous year. And does he just create a little bit more of a problem? Because we've never seen Kyler consistently support multiple targets. Right. And so Jefferson's going to get fed. I'm hoping, expecting, sounds like Joe is as well, Jordan Addison to be two. He should be, based on talent. But is it going to be, there's a clear one, there's a clear two, and then there's a clear everybody else, which is kind of what it's been since Addison's been there. And now is it a clear one and then a mess underneath Justin Jefferson? And I hope that's not the case. So I think that's baked into Addison's price. I think that's what you're looking at here. And if he does get the contract year bump of, hey, I got to get my life right because we know he says some off-field stuff and I got to get my game right, and I think the quarterback upgrade will help, then you're getting a great player at Addison's cost.
Okay.
I'm skittish on Kyler. And Jamie mentioned it. There is not a good track record of Kyler Murray helping multiple wide receivers get good fantasy production. But if we're looking for, you want to call it 11.6 PPR points, that's what he had at minimum every game with Carson Wentz last year. He also had 7.5 targets in those games, which is very high for him. Usually he's right around six. If we're looking for 11.6, okay, this is a receiver that I would like to have on my bench. The contingency upside's pretty good if something were to happen to Jeddah. But otherwise, I feel like I want to shoot for upside on a bunch of other wide receivers before I go back for Addison. Totally agree about the talent. I've loved him since his days at Southern Cal and Pitt, and he was awesome. But I do worry about the quarterback situation. I worry about it a little bit for Jefferson too, to be perfectly honest. Kyler has not been an amazing thrower. He's got his weaknesses. You mentioned that, Joe. And that's the type of thing that could absolutely sink the upside for everybody involved in Minnesota. One last thing, though, and this is just something that might help you feel more confident about Addison getting to 11.6. Their run game is it looks like a quagmire to me.
Yes, it does.
Because Aaron Jones is so old, Jordan Mason. I know he's going to get a good opportunity. I don't know if I'm really buying him to be great for fantasy. And Demond Claiborne is fun, but I don't know if he's going to have a big role. This team could end up throwing a lot, and that makes me a little bit more encouraged. But that makes me feel better about the floor more than the ceiling.
For what it's worth, I have my concerns are the two that these two gentlemen laid out there. It is the Juwan Jennings presence. I think, well, you know, it's different offense. I'm hoping that, like, Juwan Jennings popping off those times was really just a matter of there was nobody left at the end to throw to, and those are the games where he really started to shine. And then the Kyler Murray questions you have, I think, are completely legitimate. The thing that I keep telling myself to help me sleep at night when I make these sort of statements about Jordan Addison is that Kyler Murray's also never worked with an offensive coach the way what Kevin O'Connell is. And as somebody who coaches young quarterbacks, I can tell you, the confidence that you get when you work with people that, you know, have raw talent, and then you have all of a sudden this acumen to make them understand the field better. You can take that talent and really explain the position to them better. And even when you get to the NFL level, it's so much faster and everything is so much better at that level than it is in college. It's easier for the great athletes to dominate in college. It's something you saw Caleb Williams do, right? But he struggles when he gets to the NFL because of the reads and the progressions and all the stuff that he's got to figure out of playing the position at the highest level. I don't think Kyler's ever been challenged enough and appropriately by the right kind of offensive minds all of his time in Arizona, in an organization that frankly still makes you pay for your own lunch, which is a crazy thing. Like, that place is still not great. And I want to see what he can do in an environment that is just far better. But to the point these guys make, those are the two things I think would stunt the sleeper status potentially, which is good because he's cheap enough. If you're wrong on Addison, it's still not going to kill you in drafts.
Sure, yeah. Okay, by the way, 11.6 fantasy points is what Dave said is the lowest in the four games that he played with Carson Wentz, Jordan Addison. Just want to point out a few things. One, Carson Wentz threw a lot of passes. He threw 46, 34, 42, and then 27 passes. In that game with 27 passes, Max Brosmer had four pass attempts. So Kyler's not going to do that. But it was a 20.5% target share for Addison. And if you told me he was going to get a 20.5% target share, I would definitely take him around 100th overall, which is where he's going. But no one.
I think he deserves to go higher than that.
Yeah, fine, sure. But no one mentioned TJ Hockenson. I don't think he was completely an afterthought last year. I don't know what that was all about. If his target per out run rate bounces back, then that could complicate things. And then final thing, 11.6 again, 11.6 PPR fantasy points. Guess who averaged 11.6 PPR fantasy points per game last year?
Jefferson,
Juwan Jennings.
Oh, it right. Felt like Justin Jefferson.
What a troll. Yeah, what a troll. Look at you.
Very random. All right, let's go to Bo Nix. And we've mentioned how underappreciated Bo Nix seems this year. But yeah, he's a sleeper for you, Bo Nix. And on Fantasy Pros, Bo Nix is QB 15 going 111th. In ADP.
Oh, there? Oh, okay. So here's what I've come to with Bo Nix, is that when you're in Superflex this year, or even deeper QB leagues, I understand when you watch Bo Nix, it gets a little maddening sometimes. I understand the first halves were not great. I made this appeal on the first show that I did on Fandom when I'm talking about the guys that I'm looking and targeting and I think are good values are going to return at higher levels. And I come back to Bo Nix. And what's so interesting about Bo Nix is when you look at the projections year over year for him, you're looking at basically a copy and paste job, which I always find interesting when projections tell you that, especially when you add a wide receiver like a Jaylen Waddle, who was not there last year. You're also talking about a quarterback in his third year. So I expect most quarterbacks to have some struggles and some ups and downs in their sophomore season, because when there's more tape on you, everybody in the league has more time to study you, adjust to you, find your weaknesses. What was good is that Bo Nix, at a lot of half times, was making adjustments and coming back in games and finding ways to win football games, and that's good. That's going to keep your job. But it's funny because you look at the 2025 stats and the 2026 projections, and they are basically identical. And you're talking about a quarterback is going to get you around 300 fantasy points, and he's going right now as, what, the 15th quarterback off the board. Yeah. And if you're talking about late-round quarterback strategy, Bo Nix fits into it. If you're talking about adding another weapon in the offseason that the Broncos paid some serious draft capital for, that matters to me. I still think that run game is kind of a weird committee here. Coleman's an interesting guy later in the season. We'll see if he pops off a little bit. But Bo Nix can run. Bo Nix is mobile. I understand some of this is also concern about the injury, but it seems like Sean Payton is very bullish about him and that recovery. It seems like week one is not a problem. We're going to go right after it. But I think when you have your third year in the league, you've had success, you're on a very good team, the defense is going to continue to put them in some short yardage situations with the turnovers they create and the amount of pressure. I mean, nobody's got more sacks than the Denver Broncos the last 3 years, right? 178. That's almost 30 more than the second team, which is the Ravens. Wow. And now you're talking about a scenario where you give Bo Nix short fields, there's more scoring. You give him another weapon, there's more scoring. So I don't buy this whole copy and paste job. I think there's room for more. And the fact that he is a free 99 single quarterback league guy is great. And in Superflex, he's right in that, what I like to call the soft middle, I think is tremendous value as well.
And I would use CBS ADP on Bo Nix, but he's QB 21.
Adam Azer, it's your show. You can use the ADP from wherever you want.
We'll go Draft Sharks. We'll use different ones, but he's QB 21 on CBS, which is, honestly, it's not that crazy. He's behind Baker Mayfield, Jordan Love, Kyler Murray. It just shows you how deep the position is. All these guys could be good picks. Mm-hmm. One thing that, so I don't know if we have to get too much into Nix, because we completely agree. I mean, he's been 10th, I think, and 13th per game in his first two seasons in 6 point per passing touchdown leagues, and he's even better in 4 point. So I just look at his schedule. Now, do we think the Chiefs are going to be a tough matchup? They lost their starting cornerbacks, so
it's, well, I mean, they got the guy you've loved forever.
Who's that?
Legarius Sneed's back.
Oh, yeah. And they drafted a cornerback in top 10. But their early schedule is at the Chiefs, home against the Jaguars, who are actually pretty solid defense last year, the Rams, at the Niners, at the Chargers, and then Seattle. That's their first six games. It's just something to
keep sounds like on. They're going to need Bo Nix.
Sounds like he might struggle, though. I mean, those are tough matchups, but
could be some low-scoring games, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I think the thing about Nix is that he's like the one guy for the last, I don't know how many years, where he gets the weapon and gets no respect.
Right.
Like, he's been so good despite some of the flaws. I do question if the pass volume will still be there, because, yes, the run game is a little suspect, but it's a big hope. It's, you know, hoping J.K. Dobbins stays healthy. It's hoping Jonah Coleman can, you know, sort of fill that role. It's hoping R.J. Harvey can run better between the tackles. It's a lot of questions. So that makes sense. But, like, you still know what Sean Payton wants to do. It's like, he doesn't want to have, I think, a top five passing attack. I think he wants to be a little bit more balanced in terms of what the numbers are.
So I'll ask you guys, Bo Nix or Kyler Murray?
I'll take Bo Nix. Kyler.
Two Nixes and a Kyler, I think I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Nix or Daniel Jones?
Bo Nix.
Jared Goff.
I'll take Goff.
Goff never gets enough respect. I'll take Goff too, but it's close for me. It's definitely close.
I think since both are backups, it depends on what you're looking for. Because if you're looking for high upside, it's Bo Nix. Because I think we see what Jared Goff is. He's just kind of that 20 to 23 point type of guy. I think Bo Nix, if he hits with Jaylen Waddle, will be better. So if I need a safe quarterback, I'm going to take Jared Goff. If I need a little bit more, hey, let's swing for the fence, it's Bo Nix.
All right, last one. Rank these Knicks. Bo Nix, Stevie Nicks, Hakeem Nicks, and the New York Knicks.
Oh, well, Stevie Nicks is number one. I'm sorry, Knicks fans. Stevie Nicks is still number one. No. Silver Springs.
Stevie Nicks win.
Silver Springs Live, all-time great performance there. If you could sing a breakup song to the guy you broke up with in front of millions of people and make a ton of money off, that's baller stuff. Knicks, all great this year. Tremendous. All-time run. Somebody in my family are still crying and joy about it, and it's a beautiful thing. But let's not also forget all the pain that was there, too.
I forgot about all the pain.
It's close second. And then Hakeem Nicks, I think, is that. That's my personal ranking. But I would put Bo behind the New York Knicks just because they've won. So he's three. Hakeem is four.
Okay. Where's Jack Black singing Stevie Nicks in that list? Yes, great call. Oh,
so good.
From School of Rock.
That's a great poll, Frank.
Okay. Let's talk about breakouts here. I'm gonna lump the two breakouts together, Ricky Pearsall and Mekhi Lemon. And just doing a little bit of, let's see if I have it here, Devontae Smith notes and what his target share was. Last four regular seasons, Devontae Smith's target share in games where both A.J. Brown and Dallas Goedert played, stayed on the field, stayed healthy, didn't leave with an injury. It's not bad. It's pretty encouraging, I think. 26.9%, 21.2%, 21.4%, and 24.2%. So at least 21.2% target share for Devontae Smith when both Goddard and Brown were healthy last 4 years. Now, that's not amazing when you have the low pass volume, but anyway, I'll throw it over to Joe now. Ricky Pearsall and Mekhi Lemon are your two breakouts you wanted to talk about today. Go for it.
Well, these are two guys that are being drafted on the fringe of wide receiver 3/4, right? And I love this range because depending on what your draft strategy is, you're looking to kind of take some shots, I think, when you start to get into this range of player. Now, what Mekhi Lemon is to me is a player that I think can hit the ground running in this offense. I think there's a weird negativity around Jalen Hurts that is not deserved, considering he gets a new offensive coordinator every single year. That's a lot on a quarterback. That lack of consistency and the fact that he can overcome it every year is good. People say, well, he's not that great over the middle. It's not that he's not good over the middle. The problem is that's never been the focal point of the offense and how they want to attack it. They're going to have to change that now because of the personnel they have. And any offensive coordinator worth their salt is going to make those adjustments and start to attack the middle of the field a little bit more. When you have a guy who can play in the slot like a Mekhi Lemon, you have, or the lack thereof now, big body wide receiver like an A.J. Brown. So you're going to have to change what you do and the way you approach it with the personnel you have. And I do believe this regime will be smart enough to do that. And Mekhi Lemon, you know, he's a mercurial personality. There's no doubt about that. He is definitely not your average dude. But I do think when you watch his tape, you know, I think Amon-Ra St. Brown comparisons are very lofty. I don't want to put anybody up against the work ethic of Amon-Ra St. Brown because he is in a different planet than everybody else. But the skill set stuff is there. And I do believe this is a player that you don't have to wait till week 10 to see returns on, which is also important. And then when it comes to Ricky Pearsall, same kind of deal where Ricky Pearsall has actually shown you some flashes of this. And it's very difficult in the 49ers offense. And where I always struggle with Pearsall is, well, okay, it's Christian McCaffrey, then it's a healthy George Kittle, now it's a Mike Evans in there, so at best he's the fourth guy, right? And that's frustrating sometimes. But I think what he has going in his favor is the fact that all three of those guys all have injury concerns. There's all a path at some point where their ability to stay on the field and play every single game is in question. Ricky Pearsall's had the similar problem, some of those obviously beyond his control. We know about that in his first year. But there were some flashes last year where you saw him operate in this field, and it does feel like that draft capital is not dead for this organization. It feels like Kyle Shanahan still does believe in this player very much. And Stribling, I don't think, is a guy that can compete with what Pearsall has been able to do so far. So I do think these are two guys that are right on that fringe, that if you want to double up in the wide receiver group there in that pool with that range, right? You have back-to-back picks or you're close there and you need some wide receiver help. I think at least one of these guys can deliver those kind of moments where you draft them as wide receiver 3/4s and they perform more like 2s and 3s. And that to me is how you win fantasy leagues. When you identify those guys that have the upside to jump a tier at wide receiver, and eventually you can draft guys at 2s who have number one performances half a dozen times a year. To me, that's the big difference. And I think these two guys in their respective offenses with good quarterback play can do that.
How would you rank Addison, Lemon, Pearsall?
Interesting. Because we're talking about that cluster there, right?
Yeah, it's a tough cluster.
It is. It is. One. I would still go Addison because when you've given me 20 wide receiver 20 twice, Okay, I'm not throwing that out the window. So still Addison for me. I would take Lemon next because I do think Lemon is a need more than anything. Pearsall feels like a little bit more of a luxury item in that 49er offense potentially, whereas I don't see that being an option with the Eagles. I think they need Mekhi Lemon to go be that guy. And if you're going to start jump, and I know how he doesn't have the greatest track record of drafting a wide receiver sometimes, that's that we know that sometimes it's hit and miss. But when you leapfrog the Steelers in that draft to, in order to make that pick, I think you're there to use that guy and utilize him in the offense.
Okay, Dave, how do you rank those three? Addison, Lemon, Pearsall.
It's very close between Pearsall and Addison, but I like the ceiling of Pearsall more. That'll change if we get to mid-August and George Kittle's practicing, Mike Evans is in the best shape of his life, CMC is still out there doing his thing. There's definitely going to be a target crunch if all those guys are healthy in San Francisco, and it makes it really hard to buy into Pearsall. That's on top of the fact that Pearsall has had injury concerns. I do love the flashes. Joe mentioned the flashes. I love the flashes from Pearsall. Every time he had at least seven targets last year, he was over 13 PPR points. With Lemon, I'm wondering if it's going to take a year because the college game isn't the same as the pro game. We all know this. And the things that he was great at in college, yeah, it fits what Philadelphia's offense is looking for now. They need somebody who can beat zone, somebody who's going to cross the field, sit in the soft spots, make a play after the catch, have that yards after catch. I'm not sure the targets will be there for him. I'm not as optimistic about it as Joe is. Let's put it that way, especially with Philadelphia consistently being a bastion of running and not putting the ball in the air a ton. And if we're expecting this big leap for Devontae Smith, he's the one who's going to get the targets. I think Dallas Goedert will have a say in things, particularly in the red zone. And I feel like Lemon will be a little too boom or bust. So give me Pearsall first, Addison second, Lemon significantly after those two.
Adam, can I ask Dave a question real quick?
No.
All right. It was a good try. Thanks, everybody. Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate the time. If you're a defensive coordinator, what's the first thing you do when you're going against the Eagles? What are you game planning to stop?
You got
to
stop the run. Yeah, no the question. Run.
You got to stop Saquon. And to me, that's that notion of like, that's where the opportunity lies, because I know now you can't beat me over the top anymore with A.J. Brown. You can't throw these jump balls there. You don't have that kind of crew that's going to be able to handle that kind of a workload or that kind of style. So now you become easier, in my opinion, as a D coordinator, that I can go out there and I can say, all right, I'm going to eliminate Saquon. Okay, Jalen Hurts, you're going to beat me the passing game through all this stuff. And I think that, to me, is where at least the opportunity for Lemon lives. But to Dave's point, yeah, that's still going to – they're going to still try to dictate their best situation, which is to run the football. So that's going to be a fascinating thing to watch it play out, especially in that East that's gotten a little bit better.
The tricky part about that for defensive coordinators is that you've got to stop the run and you've got to play zone coverage at the same time. Because if you play man, you really give a huge advantage to Jalen Hurts if your pass rush can't get to him. So I think Lemon is a good fit for them. Maybe like we'll see him in September not be great. And by the time we get to Thanksgiving, then he could be somebody that we're considering as a wide receiver three. That wouldn't surprise me either. But I've got my eye on 2027 for Lemon. I loved him coming out. He was my favorite receiver coming out. I just think it's going to take a little bit of time. And it's not just him. It's everybody in Philadelphia is going to have to adjust. This is a West Coast offense. It's a lot different than what they've been playing. Yes. And I think there's going to be some – they're going to ask some things of Jalen Hurts that he's not necessarily – he hasn't done a lot of. And it remains to be seen if he's going to be as good doing those things right away or if it's going to take a little bit of time.
But the hallmark of that West Coast offense is letting it rip.
I just hope he throws more. I mean, the last 2 years, they've been so low in pass volume. Jamie Corey says, Pearsall, Addison, Lemon sounds like a hoity-toity drink Adam would get at his high-end New York deli.
I have been at a bar where you've ordered that with you.
Pearsall, I don't think so. Not me. Pearsall, Addison. I hate lemon, and I don't drink.
It would have been a twist of lemon. Like that was. That's
no, right. So, and the drink comes in 6 months because it's on the shelf too long.
Lemon and drinks is no good. Jamie, your ranking of Pearsall, Addison, Lemon.
It's Addison, then Pearsall and Lemon closer together. I think the concern with Pearsall versus Lemon is Lemon's walking into a situation that is so wide open that the targets should be there for him. The question becomes, is the Marquise Brown, Dontavian Wicks, Elijah Moores of the world, are they going to impact Lemon early on in the season enough where he doesn't shine? Because he's clearly a much more talented player than those guys at this point in his career. It's just a matter of, does Marquise Brown, for example, do the right things because he's a veteran, has been on a few different offenses, can adjust a little bit quicker. So that's really the concern there. Pearsall's walking into a situation where there's a Hall of Famer joining him. Dave said if Kittle's going to practice, it seems like he's almost certainly going to practice at this point based on what we're seeing from him. The thing that I hate about Pearsall right now is the health concerns. There's a video that's been circulating of him running in shorts and no shirt on with a knee brace on still. Like, what are we doing here if he can't stay healthy with this guy? It's just so unfortunate because there's so much talent. But they bring in Evans. They bring in Christian Kirk, who I think is one of these guys that's always going to be an underrated veteran that will impact almost everybody. And, you know, we hate that. Coaches love that. And then I do think, you know, again, we're begging for news items. The latest one from the 49ers is, oh, the Rams were in on Deshaun Stribling. Everybody thought he was this great wide receiver. Yet at the time he was drafted, everybody just pooped all over it because it was too soon. So we'll see how much Stribling's a factor here. But I think just in the case of Pearsall, like, you know, Purdy's going to lean on Evans because of who he is and what they're expecting from him. You know he's going to lean on Kittle. And then I think Pearsall's fighting for that third spot, which he should get. But, you know, we have that guy Christian McCaffrey as well. Lemon just has such a wide open canvas. You know, we are anointing Devontae Smith, understandably so. There's 120 targets that are available. If Lemon's not better than Marquise Brown and those guys, at least at some point early in the season, I don't think it's going to take as long as Dave thinks. I think it's going to happen sooner. I think Lemon's going to be a factor for Jalen Hurts. And if he's not better than, you know, Joe made a great point, then it's another failure from Howie Roseman just in drafting that position once again.
I will say this too. It's Christian Kirk that has me having Pearsall third in that list, because to Jamie's point, there's nothing I hate more than a boring veteran that gets brought in for depth when you're trying to get a breakout in fantasy, because that, especially in the early going, in the first 6 weeks, some guys are going to want to lean on the veteran and then, you know, see if he can contribute because he's a veteran and you trust him and all that stuff. And that to me is why Pearsall's third in that list, but they're all tight in ADP for a reason.
Okay. So just want to give people a little hope for San Francisco. The 2023 San Francisco 49ers, they threw only 29 passes per game. They have become more pass heavy, more of Brock Purdy's team since then. Brock Purdy was QB8 per game. Christian McCaffrey was RB1 per game. George Kittle was tight end 7 per game, almost tight end 6 per game, in a pretty good year for tight ends. He averaged 12.7 fantasy points per game. Brandon Ayuk was wide receiver 16 per game, and Deebo Samuel was actually wide receiver 14 per game, but that, if you take away a lot of his rushing, if you take away his rushing stats, he would have been about wide receiver 36 per game. So that is the, I think I said QB8 for Purdy, but I forgot there were two quarterbacks ahead of him that played 1 in 5 games. So that's QB6, RB1, tight end 6 or 7, wide receiver 14 and wide receiver 36, all on the same team with them only throwing 29 passes per game. They are the offense that can be so efficient that they turn their targets into fantasy points basically better than any team in the NFL. All right, we're going to take a break and get into Joe's busts, Harold Fannin Jr., and Malik Nabers of the New York Giants when we come back. Harold Fannin Jr., Malik Nabers on the bus list for Joe Pisapia. Let's talk about Harold Fannin Jr.
Look, I like Harold Fannin Jr. as a talent. So this is not a knock on Harold Fannin. This is a knock more on the relationship of Harold Fannin to the tight end room that we're looking at in the pool this year, and then on top of which the quarterbacks he's going to play with at some point in time. So Harold Fannin, I think there were some flashes there where people going, okay, this is going to be the main guy in the offense, and it very well still might be. But here's kind of the struggle bus for me. You're still dealing with a Watson, Shador Sanders mix there that we still have no real clarity on. I mean, we can all take our guesses, but at the end of the day, it's still going to be weird in August, and it could even be weird all year. Then you have a situation where he's going ahead of somebody like Tucker Kraft. Now, Tucker Kraft is exactly the guy that you want Harold Fannin to be, that he was last year, right? Because Tucker Kraft was the guy that was the focal point, basically, of that passing attack. They did not bring anybody else. The biggest target competition that a guy like Tucker Kraft has is Christian Watson, who, God bless him, is very spectacular in his playmaking ability, but less spectacular in his ability to stay on the field. And when I look at Harold Fannin and I look at, I could take Tyler Warren ahead of him, I could take Tucker Kraft after him, I can even throw the dice on Sam Laporta or even wait longer if I think that I'm, you know, going to get a great discount and return on investment on a George Kittle return eventually healthy. And I'll make do with some other tight end like a Goddard or even Isaiah Likely early on. Fannin to me is the guy that sticks out, not because of his lack of ability, but because I just don't know if you can look at these projections and be honest that this is where we're going to go with this player within this team. It's a new coach. It's a new OC. It's a muddy quarterback situation. They drafted a bunch of wide receivers. I don't know a damn thing about who the Browns are going to be in 2026. And I think anybody who thinks that they do is wrong. And that's my concern, is where he's going, not necessarily the player. So that's my take on Fannin. And then for the other bust too that I was discussing too, I mean, the neighbors one still to me, I think this is one that's going to fall off a map eventually. I think we're just giant nerds who are here early to the game and things haven't caught up yet. But you just can't possibly keep thinking of Malik Nabers as a top 10 wide receiver, not in talent, but in draft capital. I mean, it's just absurd, right? And I think the smarter drafts, the sharper drafts you're in, you're going to see this fall off because the recovery time is going to be there. And then what does he look like when he does get on the field? Is he going to miss the full 6 weeks? Is he going to miss 10 weeks? We don't know. And we don't know what the Giants are going to look like by the time that happens. So Malik Nabers is an intriguing dynasty buy right now because of the downturn, and you can even wait for it when it gets in season and people get more frustrated. You might even get a better take on him and a better discount. But I think in 2026 in redraft, it's just a really tough investment until you get far beyond the range. I mean, I'll ask Dave. I mean, Dave, would you rather have Terry McLaurin or Malik Nabers going into this year?
Terry McLaurin.
Wait, why do you keep asking Dave?
Because Jamie seems busy.
But I was the one. I was the one who brought you.
No, I asked Dave because it was Terry McLaurin, and he was the guy that originally said McLaurin. That's why I said. But Jamie, would you rather have DJ Moore this year, or would you rather have Malik Nabers?
Malik Nabers,
DJ Moore.
No. See, even if I ask Jamie, Dave answers. So
yeah, I would have.
No. I was just telling you who you were trying to compare.
I actually have a question for you, Joe. You said that Malik Nabers is a great dynasty buy right now. If you were selling Malik Nabers, what would you be looking to get for Malik Nabers?
That's a great question. I don't want to sell him. That's the deep answer.
It's not a good question. It's a terrible question. It's a terrible market.
I'll tell you what. Look, if I'm a team that could win now, I would take the next 2 years of A.J. Brown. Because I think the next 2 years of A.J. Brown with Drake May are going to be very good, where somebody might be looking for the next five or more of Malik Nabers. I think that's a deal you could pull off. It's got to be somebody with a little bit of age, with a shorter window of success, but still one that's going to make an impact. That would be the kind of trade I'd be looking for.
So if you were selling Malik Nabers, would you sell it for, like, let's say, Deshaun Stribling and Antonio Williams? And
this feels very close to home, Jamie. And, by Adam's reaction,
there was a veteran receiver thrown in there. I don't remember what his name was.
Christian Kirk.
If we keep revisiting this trade, I'm gonna need a few Addison Pearsall lemons to get through the day.
What was it?
Is this an Adam Azer trade?
I'll go ahead and look up the trade. I mean, I made a trade. It was two first round picks. They were picks 11 and 12, and Michael Wilson. Yeah, this year. But when I made the trade, I didn't know how horrible this draft class was going to be and whatnot. So I was getting too late. The last two picks of the first round, Michael Wilson, and maybe a future second or something like that for Nabers. And obviously it looks like it's going to be a pretty bad trade. So suck.
You never know.
Yeah, you probably know, but
we haven't done the draft yet because Adam, Joe, you know when rookie drafts mostly happen?
Yes, they do. Usually right after.
You know when Adam's rookie drafts happen?
No. When do they happen? Before August. The draft?
No, we're doing it Monday. Yes. It's starting on Monday.
That's an interesting choice.
And honestly, I wish I was going to be even later because I really want to see where Stephon Diggs.
Maybe you could push it to October.
I would love to. I think so. I think we should see these guys in action before we put them on our teams. I just think, you know.
You know why he's doing this, Joe? Because last year he drafted R.J. Harvey before they signed J.K. Dobbins and he's pissed.
Yeah.
I can understand being pissed about that.
That's exactly right. I think the Nabers or McLaurin, Nabers or DJ Moore questions are tough. I don't think you can really answer that kind of question. You shouldn't be drafting it because we don't know anything about Malik Nabers' health. John Harbaugh has been very vague about it. And,
well, we know he's not healthy, though. That's the thing.
But they haven't ruled him out for week one.
They have not ruled him out for week one.
They haven't ruled him in for week one either.
We're playing by week seven. Like, that's where we are. Yeah. So again, it comes down to like what you're looking for, what your expectations are. It's just hard to buy into them right now, especially as we continue to find out hey, they want to run the ball. Hey, they want to be a little bit more this, a little bit more that. Like, it doesn't seem like, hey, let's feature Malik Nabers.
I would take him over both DJ Moore and Terry McLaurin.
Jamie, you might know this because, you know, you've got that beautiful mind thing. How many big time wide receiver one performances in Harbaugh offenses have we had in 18 years?
Not many.
I'm trying to think of one. Did we get a Torrey Smith back in the day? Did we get one of those? I don't think so.
He had Bolden and Torrey Smith. You know, we've been chasing the Zay Flowers breakout.
Steve Smith. Okay, Steve Smith probably, right?
But even then, like, Steve Smith wasn't
the Steve Smith that he was, right?
The best version of him.
I'm just saying, like, to Jamie's point, like, Harbaugh is a, you know, old school kind of coach, and, you know, it's a new school NFL, and that's kind of what cost him, I think, the last couple of years.
I mean, I'd still give him the benefit of the doubt that if Malik Nabers were healthy, he'd find ways to get Malik Nabers to football, because I don't think he had a receiver quite like Malik Nabers. But now you've got me thinking about when there might have been any wide receiver under, I think there might have been like two under John Harbaugh.
Hold on.
Averaged over 15 PPR points per game.
You got two straight seasons of basically 120 targets for Zay Flowers. If Malik Nabers, two questions, just answer yes or no. If Malik Nabers plays more of 17 games, does he get 120 targets?
North of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think Terry McLaurin and DJ Moore are getting 120 targets? Because I just don't think
Malik Nabers is playing a lot of games.
I think this year you're getting over 120 targets for both those guys, yes.
All right, because you almost never get 130 from McLaurin in his career. 120 is usually
true, but again, we have a situation for this year as we stay, as we're doing this show on July 23rd. There is Terry McLaurin, and the four of us is the receiving corps for the Washington Commanders.
But if they're going to have similar targets, again,
I fully stretched out before the show, Jamie, so I'm ready.
If the targets are going to be similar, I'm going to take Nabers over McLaurin.
Anymore. I think if it was a healthy Malik Nabers, everybody would, but it's not a healthy Malik Nabers. So let's just go targets per game. And you're saying, you know, let's just say 7.5 per game for each guy. Then Nabers healthy, clearly. But
an unhealthy Malik Nabers doesn't create target opportunity at that level.
I have been anti-Nabers.
Nor does he separate like we're used to seeing him separate.
The difference.
And that's the biggest.
I've been anti-Nabers since January. Okay.
But if you're drafting Malik Nabers at this point, you're drafting him for what probably his mid to late season performance.
Right.
I don't necessarily agree. Entire season.
I mean,
it ain't top 10 overall wide receiver. I mean,
no,
miss me with that.
I think there have been, I've been anti. Remember, I said somebody drafted him in the first round. I said, what did I?
You were the first person I heard to say, why are we drafting Malik Nabers so soon?
But I think it's gone a little bit too far. And there have been enough examples of players who have come back from torn ACLs. I don't know about ACL plus meniscus. And been really good, like Jordy Nelson.
Watson's a great example.
Right. If we get a Christian Watson year from Malik Nabers?
You'll be happy with it if
you have Nabers, but only if you're drafting him in the right spot.
No, but Christian Watson basically came back and was himself. Malik Nabers is better than Christian Watson. If he comes back and is himself, then you're going to be so happy to get Malik Nabers in the third or the fourth round, even if you have to miss a few weeks. I guess I just think maybe we're going a little bit too far, but I also think he's probably the player that we cannot speak intelligently about more so than any other player, because we just don't know what his health is, what his status is.
To answer Joe's question, the only receiver in the John Harbaugh era in Baltimore that averaged more than 15 PPR points per game was Steve, don't call me Torrey Smith. Seven games, 2015, 18.7 PPR points. The next he doesn't even qualify. The next highest is Zay Flowers last year.
Last year, 14.3. Right. Because you can't ignore where the league is now. Like, it's just... That's the nature of this beast of the NFL. Of course, you have Malik Nabers, you get Malik Nabers the ball. My big concern is you don't see a healthy Malik Nabers or enough of a healthy Malik Nabers to justify anywhere close to the draft capital it takes to get him right now. I think it's just absurd. And I do think that will change, because shows like this, we're going to yell and scream about it. And I'm going to yell and scream on Fandom NFL about it. And eventually people will go, oh, yeah, you know what? That is a little too risky. Why would I do that? I can take all these other guys that are going to contribute from week one, theoretically. And you know, my good friend Scott Bachman always says, you know, football is hard enough. Everyone's going to get hurt. Why the hell are you taking guys that are hurt before we start? And you know what? It's a good point.
No, it's not. It's a good point. It's not a great point. Because sometimes And you know, sometimes they just fall to the right spot. And Rashee Rice was suspended, but he was also coming off season-ending knee injury, which happened in week four. Mm-hmm. Malik Nabers coming off season-ending knee injury, which happened in week four. Rice's injury wasn't as bad. And he was suspended. He had even more time to rest. But when he came back, he was an absolute league winner. So I think if you reach for him, then it's terrible. You have to feel great about it. I think in a shallower league, it's easier to get away with, right? Because you can find players to plug in more easily while you wait for Malik Nabers to be himself, to be great, or even to come back and play. But I have been pretty much don't draft guys coming off injuries. But you know how the industry just sort of adapts and adjusts, but maybe overcorrects sometimes. And I think that might be happening with Malik
Nabers. Fall in love with talent and forget to we always want to, when we see extraordinary talent, I think it's the fan in all of us that wants to automatically think that things are going to be okay. And I think more often than not, they're not. And I think sometimes that's a hard truth that we just don't want to, you know, have that moment where we have that realization of it. And it is, to me, it's all about the investment you have to make. Look, if he's the 50th wide receiver off the board, sure. Well, I'll take a flyer.
Three, four turn in a 12 team league. Would you take Malik Nabers there?
Oh, no, I'm not touching him on the first 36 guys. Cause as 36 guys that I can find, they're going to play more than him this year. And that's where I'm starting. That's my starting point.
I'm around later with him.
Me too.
See, I understand being around later with him, but if you're picking late, you're not getting him at the 5-6 turn, right? So that's your chance. And this is going to sound really bad. I'm going to say it anyway. I'm sure you guys play in different types of leagues where you're playing against like great fantasy players, and you play in some leagues where you know you're going to do pretty well because you're playing against casual fantasy players. I think if you're playing in one of those casual leagues, I think you can be a little riskier with guys like Malik Nabers. Take him a little bit earlier.
Well, sure. I mean, that's why we always say know your league and know what happens, you know, if there's a history there, and obviously who you're playing with matters. But at the same time, you know, when you're talking about, you know, just the two guys that Joe mentioned, Terry McLaurin's in such a great spot this year if nobody else is added, if Jaden Daniels stays healthy, but that's not worrying about his knees right now. DJ Moore is going to a situation where he could be the next version of what Stephon Diggs was with Josh Allen. And there's no health risk. Like, obviously, if Malik Nabers is healthy, nobody's questioning it. Even with John Harbaugh's history, and maybe Nabers didn't finish last year like we would have hoped because he only had really one good game of the three healthy ones that he played. Jackson Dart, they're going to run the ball, all these things, all these questions. But, like, the talent would clearly put him in a spot where you're like, I'm willing to gamble on this. It's why we've chased Garrett Wilson for the last couple of years because of the talent. You see what he's capable of doing. That's why we chase Chris Olave.
They ain't Malik Nabers.
They're not Malik Nabers. But no. At the same time, when you're talking health, that has to be considered. Clearly, we are screaming uphill, upstream, whatever you want to say, because nobody is paying attention to it based on the early ADP that we're seeing. You know, Joe's seeing wide receiver 10. I haven't seen really anything later than wide receiver 15 and still going in round 3. No matter what we're telling people right now, they're still seeing that name and drafting that player. We'll see what happens when pup list, non-pup list, health, non-health, wherever he comes out. You know, if he had that softball video show up again this week, nobody would be drafting.
That is absolutely in people's minds. The people who are low on Nabers are absolutely thinking about that.
Right, but that's also video from a month ago, and this is a video happening in late July. By late August, we don't know what he's going to be doing. If he's full go in practice 2 weeks before the season, and every report says it looks like the old Malik Nabers, you're not even going to get him at the 3-4 turn. Somebody in every draft will reach for him.
That is absolutely
knowing what he's capable of doing, because before this knee injury, he was already established as one of the best athletic talents in the National Football League at wide receiver, and certainly would be in a position, no matter who the offensive coordinator is, to get a bunch of targets because of just how damn good he is. So I think it's great that we're having this conversation now. This is the situation now. I don't even think it stays this way no matter what. If he's not practicing a month from now, he's going to fall even farther in drafts.
Yeah. And if he starts moving back up, I'll be back out on Malik Nabers. So the fun dance will continue. Okay, I wanted to do a running back versus wide receiver segment. We got about 5 minutes for it, so we'll go quickly here. If I can find it in my notes. Sorry, here we go. Running back versus wide receivers. Oh, by the way, Joe, I have not and probably won't draft Harold Fannin in any leagues. Right, running backs versus wide receivers.
You're lost. Yeah, we ignored the whole Harold Fannin conversation.
Yeah, but
we?
It's a great call. He shouldn't be tight end five off the board.
Okay, well, there you go.
No, he should. I don't mind him being around there. Monken's track record with tight ends and the lack of established guys in Cleveland is too big to ignore.
Yeah, so is Deshaun Watson's history with tight ends, and the two rookies are going to be much better than the crap that he had last year with him.
Running backs versus wide receivers.
Both of them will be. One of them will.
Seems like everybody wants to talk about Harold Fannin, actually.
Running backs versus wide receivers. Bijan Robinson.
Do you have a Harold Fannin one, Adam?
A Harold Fannin what?
We're about to play one of your games, and Harold Fannin a player that we're going to talk about?
Well, the game is running back versus wide receiver, so I'll let you.
So probably not.
It's a hard no. It's a hard no, Dave. It's a hard no.
Oh, man. Bijan Robinson versus Ja'Marr Chase. You each have at most 20 seconds to make your case. Who you taking, Jamie, Bijan or Chase?
Bijan.
Taking Bijan too, but it's like Chase is third for me, so.
Yeah. Does the exact same boat as Joe.
Does it change in a three-receiver league?
No.
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 Okay. Saquon Barkley versus Drake London.
I'll take London.
I'll take Drake London.
We're talking full PPR, obviously, because it's a no-brainer otherwise.
It's a no-brainer, Barkley, and you're saying half PPR, it's Barkley?
Half not. It's definitely Saquon Barkley over Drake London.
Half PPR, I'll still take London.
I think I'm going to take Barkley over London, even in full PPR.
Okay.
Sounds crazy, okay. But I'm a little worried about London's efficiency if Tua's the quarterback.
And next we have Arizona rookie running back. Jeremiah Love or
if people watching knew what happened before the show and the controversy over that little sound drop, they'd be just shocked.
I think I'm gonna play it again.
But instead, everybody's wondering what they're rewinding to try and hear what they just heard because they've never heard it before.
I'm gonna make it louder. Here we go. Jeremiah Love. If you could tell me in the chat what the love is from. Then
I'd love to never hear that again.
You win a prize. Yeah. Jeremiah Love versus T. Higgins. This upside versus safety.
I'll take T. Higgins.
T. Higgins is a safe way to go, but yeah. I'll tell you what, man. There's something about the second half of Jeremiah Love I kind of want to be a part of. But to draft, I think T. Higgins is a better draft pick. I think I'd rather trade for Jeremiah Love around week six.
Trade for who?
Trade for Jeremiah Love.
Wrong one. There you go. Yes, it is.
I should never encourage him.
Good job, Philip. You win. That is worth a little love. And Travis Etienne or Travis HN versus Ladd McConkey. Who you taking?
Is this like a three-person battle? Etienne versus HN versus McConkey. It's Ladd for me.
Ladd for me too.
Yeah, three for three. Another sweep on that one. It's close though.
How about former Lion versus current Lion? David Montgomery or Jameson Williams?
Montgomery.
I want Montgomery. I'll take the boring ass David Montgomery every week than the 0 or 30 that Jameson Williams is. That's just my personality as a manager.
And I don't buy this report that's coming out all of a sudden that says that David Montgomery is going to be splitting.
It's already been refuted by the person who was supposedly reporting it.
Okay, that's great because the coaching staff clearly did not love Woody Marks in high leverage situations last year, and I doubt that's changing after they acquired Montgomery.
You're referring to the Jane Slater report that somebody, I think, misquoted. So it was like something aggregated from something she said, and then she was like, I did not say this. It was not accurate.
Okay.
It's that time of year, boys.
Yep.
DeAndre Swift versus DJ Moore.
DJ Moore.
DJ Moore.
I got Swift a little higher.
No, look at you.
Yeah, look at me.
Very important. I don't know if he's still in the chat, but we got this about 33 minutes ago. Scott Fish said, hi, all. Great crew today. Waiting for my flight to the Fantasy Football Expo, which Joe is also going to be attending. But Joe and Scott have another thing in common. They are both going to be in the FFT Open this year. So Joe is going to have the Joe Pisapia or the Pisapia division. If you want to play football, fantasy football against Joe, that will be, I think, August 3rd. I know we have a date for that. It's somewhere around August 3rd. We're going to be rolling it out. 36 divisions for the FFT Open this year.
Nice.
$250 to join, and it all goes to St. Jude. And if we sell every spot, $99,000 going to St. Jude. So be a part of that. in a couple of weeks, we'll be putting those spots up to be had. And Scott Fish, Joe Pisapia, and so many big names from the fantasy industry are going to be in this. We're really excited about it. Joe, thank you for coming on. Always great to have you.
Great to see all of you, my friends, and I appreciate all of you even more over the last couple of weeks, too. You all have been so kind to me, and I want to thank everyone in the chat, too, for the kind stuff. And go get a Fantasy Black Book. Go check out the new channel, too. New show drops at 11 a.m. this morning, too. Some really good content on there. Fandom NFL on the YouTube. Subscribe, and keep donating to great causes, too, like St. Jude's, too. I know it's one that's near and dear to my heart. We run a Black Book Charity League for St. Jude's every year, too. So great stuff, gentlemen. Excited to be a part of it.
And August 3rd, I've been told, was correct for the FFT open spots. Dave and Jamie, thank you. I'll talk to you guys at noon Eastern on CBS Sports Network. Thanks for watching and listening, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow on Fantasy Football Today.
Paramount Podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Pluto Phone. If you know the name of the movie you'd like to see, The Matrix, Transformers, Rise of the Beasts, or Mean Girls.
That is so fetch.
Just stream it for free on Pluto TV. Stream now, pay never.